Hey guys, and welcome to the Moms and Murder podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my bestie, Melissa, over here. I was not with you guys last week, but I am extremely excited to be back today to record our 10th episode, woo-hoo! Which I just cannot believe that we're already 10 episodes into this. It's just been so fun, and it's flown by, and episode 10.
We've had 10 different days that we've been able to get together and record without children, and that's really the miracle in the whole thing.
Yeah, honestly, I think the best part of the podcast is having planned, scheduled, weekly, just a little bit of time just to ourselves, so
yeah.
Even though I have to spend it with Melissa.
Yeah, you got to take what you can get, to be honest.
Yeah, honestly, it's true.
So we just are recovering from Hurricane Irma. And Mandy, you made it out basically unscathed from Irma.
I did. I'm scared to even say that we didn't not lose power. We didn't have to throw away any food. And
Mandy's the worst.
Yeah. Nobody had to fist fight each other at my house because they were so angry about everything. But that hasn't been the case for you, has
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no. So we're on day 7. I look like a mangy rat, and words aren't really my thing. But we've been staying at my in-laws, which for anybody else would be terrible, but my in-laws are wonderful people, and I'm not saying that because they're standing here with a gun to my head, but they're really, really great. But anytime you're out of your element for a week, your kids go bonkers, and that's where we're at in this part of our life. So we should have power by Wednesday, which is only 10 days, in which I'm getting real stabby. So anyway, so thank you guys. Thanks, Megan, for helping us last week. And I'm glad to have Mandy back.
Yay!
And we'll have Megan probably at some point for an episode that we're thinking about doing on Guatemala, because she lived in Guatemala for a while, as we talked about. That's a really kind of a neat episode. So we are going to get right into it. We are about to hit 30,000 downloads. By the time you hear this, we will be at 30,000 downloads, which is
crazy.
Crazy. Again, our family cannot be doing all of these downloads because we can see where they're from, and they're all over the world, and that's just so neat to us. And we are lame-os and don't know what you guys are doing with your free time, but thanks for spending it with us. And also, we oddly are on the iTunes charts for society and culture. Don't know how that
I don't
happened.
Understand what's happening here. I really don't.
Basically, iTunes is falling apart and we got in there. So somebody sent that to us, which was really, really nice. But at the end of this episode, we kind of on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram posted last night, because we're last minute people, that we were going to have people call in on our voicemail or send us an email, kind of just telling us their favorite show and who they are and all their personal information, so we can hack into their lives and steal their identities, because they've got to be better than ours. So you should hear those at the end if anybody ended up calling. I don't know.
If anyone did it. I don't know if we could convince people to actually do that.
Or radio silence. One of those two things that are going to happen. So we've got the 10th episode, and then also we got our new stickers in for all of our Patreon
They're
people.
So awesome. I'm so excited about them. I actually stole a few of them from Melissa, who had them sent to her.
Yeah.
But I love them so much.
They're super cute.
I'm not even a sticker person, but I'm going to have to think of places to stick these.
Yeah. Basically, I see using them as like Band-Aids, because my kids use all of my Band-Aids. So that'll work. So if you're interested in one of our adorable stickers or what else we have to offer on Patreon, check us out. Patreon.com/momsandmurder, I believe. And feel free to support us if you'd like us. Two random women on the interwebs. Not it. That's not true.
Random women.
Well, and on the internet. I don't want people to think we're just people on the internet. That's creepy and has all kinds of connotations. So we're just voices on a podcast. I don't know. And then also we have a couple promos at the end of the show. Two shows that I really love. One is a newer show with Lainey Hobbs, and she's awesome and has a show, True Crime Fan Club. And this is her other brainchild. And then also a few friends of ours from Corpus Delicti, probably how you pronounce it.
I don't try to pronounce anything.
Yeah. I pronounce it how it's spelled, and that's probably wrong. Last thing, and then we'll get right into the show. Email us if you've done any reviews between today, I'm sorry, in the past, or for the next week. So this releases on Tuesday. So you're listening on Tuesday, which is the 19th. So between the 19th and the 26th, midnight-ish, Eastern Standard Time.
Don't wait till the last minute. Just
please
do
don't, because I can't do this kind of math. I won't know. You can email to momsandmurder@gmail.com. A screenshot of your review. If it's an old one, that's fine. If it's on iTunes, wonderful. If it's on Facebook, that's great too. And then we'll put you in a drawing to win a sticker. Because really, at this point, all we have to offer are stickers.
And we're very proud of the stickers.
We love the stickers. So anyway, if you're interested in that, please do that. We would love to hear from you. And we are going to get right into the show after 5 minutes. Mandy is going to give us a rundown on tonight's 10th special, and it's during the day episode.
Go ahead. All right, everybody. So the case we're going to be talking about today is one that I really like, and just
because like you say
that. I do. Well, I like them all, but I especially like ones that include like a dumb criminal who does a dumb thing to get caught, because those were always amusing to me. So today we're going to be talking about the murder of Kelly Clayton. And Kelly was a 35-year-old wife and mother at the time of her mysterious death. She lived in a home tucked in the woods in the town of Caton, New York. I'm assuming it's Caton, C-A-T-O-N. Once again,
I'm not even
we're terrible
try.
With... I mean,
with
I
words.
I don't see how else it could be pronounced. But
yeah.
So she lived in the town of Caton with her husband, Tom, and their children, who were age 7 and 3 at the time. There was a little girl named Charlie and a son named Cullen. Kelly's best friend described her as being sarcastic, witty, fun, and her sister described her as being kind of a free spirit, wasn't afraid of adventure. She was just full of life and, you know, had no problem taking the bull by the horn, so to speak, and kind of just going where the wind blew her.
So that part's not me, but I like the sarcastic, witty part.
Right.
She could have been one of us.
She could. But at one point, Kelly actually left her small town home in upstate New York and went to move to Vegas and became a cocktail waitress. And
sure.
You know, just you can picture the big headdresses and all the crazy mm-hmm. stuff that they wear in Vegas and fun. I've never been to Vegas.
No.
But I have been to upstate New York. my family actually is from there, my mom's side of the family. And my sister actually just moved back up there. So I can just imagine what a different environment going to Vegas would be from upstate New York. It's definitely no Vegas.
Yeah. So,
you know, nothing wrong with it, but a very different type of atmosphere. So on September 29th, 2015 at 12:39 a.m., police responded to a 911 call made by Thomas Clayton, who of course I said was Kelly's husband. And in this call, he was reporting that he had returned home from a poker game with friends to find his wife, Kelly, dead on the kitchen floor. The scene was pretty gruesome from what the detectives described. They also had body cams and everything, but, you know, of course, you don't get to see, like, the crazy footage. Of course, they don't show that, which I wouldn't want to see anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you saying? No.
I mean, I am a little bit morbid, and I do like dark things, but I don't really want to see all that.
Yeah,
so,
no.
So that's okay. So I'll take their word for it. But they said the scene was, it was pretty nasty. There had obviously been a struggle. Kelly had... The attack had apparently started upstairs in her bedroom while she was sleeping, and it appeared through the evidence that was throughout the house that she was chased down the stairs, you know, into the first floor of the home, and eventually, basically, she was bludgeoned to death. She was beat with, at this point, they didn't know what. It just looked like she had been badly beaten and that she had really put up a good fight. So... it's just so sad to me. The saddest part about all this is that the daughter had apparently seen the entire attack.
Yeah.
So my heart just goes out to that poor child because, she, like I said, she was 7. So, you know, my oldest child just turned 8. So basically the same age. And, you know, I remember things from when I was that age.
Yeah.
So you just – I can't imagine that there would be any way that this poor baby would not have some kind of, you know, lasting long-term effects from – seeing something like that.
Well, and she said that her mom was yelling at her, get your brother and go to your room, like as she's being attacked, which gives me chills that the mom is, of course, that's your natural instinct is to take care of your children. But it just, man, it just hurts even a little bit more to know she was completely out of control. Like she knew
there's nothing she could.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, very sad. But so little Charlie, like I said, had saw the entire attack take place. And she actually told the police on the scene that a robber is what she described. A robber had come into the home and attacked her mommy. Yeah. And they, of course, asked her to describe this person that she thought she saw. And of course she said they had on, you know, dark clothes, a mask was right. One thing that she said. But one of the strange things was that she just, when the officer would ask her specific questions like, well, how tall was this person?
Was he taller than me?
Was he taller than me? Shorter than me? Whatever. And this little girl kept saying, about the same height as daddy.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the answer that she gave a lot of the time.
About the eyes.
About the eyes even.
Remember,
right.
It was like, It was a man. How do you know it was a man? Because of his eyes. What were his eyes? Oh, the eyes were like daddy's. Whoa.
That's a little, yeah, like, okay.
And the officers mentioned, like, it was kind of her kind of putting together, like, kind of watching her put together, oh, wow, this, you know, could be my dad.
Right. And then, of course, as the detective, I'm sure had to be thinking, okay, it was definitely
yeah,
dad.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So we'll go on a little bit to talk about a little bit more about Thomas Clayton and just kind of find out who he was and what, you know, kind of person that he was. And we'll go into what we think, you know, about him after that. So Tom Clayton was an athlete. He played hockey for the Elmira Jackals in early 2000s. So
I'm not familiar.
I'm not either. I don't know a lot about hockey. I'm assuming this is like a minor, you know,
minor
level.
League?
Is it?
Is
do
it
they
league?
Call it that? It's league. Yeah, it's league, right?
Even if it's not baseball, it's league.
Well, because it's the NHL, okay. Is the right?
Yeah, <you're> right. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know anything about any sports, really.
But oh gosh,
especially not hockey.
Yeah,
hockey, that's just yeah, not really. We don't do a lot of hockey stuff down
we're
here.
We're in Florida.
In Florida, yeah, we don't
what
have that.
Do?
But anyway, so he was at some level. He played hockey, and like I said, early 2000s. It was during this time as a hockey player that he met Kelly.
Right.
And apparently Kelly and her sister and mom were actually attending a hockey game, probably just as a fun outing.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's not a lot to do in upstate New York, so this is probably something they just did for funsies.
Yeah.
But of course, Kelly and Tom, they locked eyes and, you know, just the typical the rest was history kind of thing. And it was instant attraction. They were, you know, just apparently head over heels crazy about each other.
How does that happen? He's in the middle of a game. Like, where?
I'm literally imagining him, like, playing a game and seeing it, like, play out. Like, they just locked eyes and then
I'm more gruesome.
He just left the ice and went over and passionately kissed her or something.
Mandy's reenacting and this is getting creepy. I more imagine that he takes, like, a hockey puck to the mouth and a tooth flies out and she, like, hands him his tooth and says, sorry, this is yours.
You're so That's weird.
I really
I'm imagining the passionate kissing in front of the whole stadium and everything. No?
I'm going for tooth.
Yeah. So they were married 2 years later. And then another few years down the road, of course, they had their children.
Right.
And, you know, their life was incredible from what friends and family described. Kelly's best friend described Tom as being a very generous person. She said he showered Kelly with things and, you know, he was just very kind and giving and not just with Kelly, but he would also offer up to help really anybody in need. And, you know, any friends who had anything that they needed, he would do what he could, you know, including things like having fundraisers for families that, you know, needed it. So he seems like just the perfect nice guy.
Yeah.
Athlete, good looking, and he's nice. So
and maybe has all of his teeth. We don't know.
And possibly still has all of his teeth. So Kelly apparently would gush about her husband to neighbors and friends. And even as much as 10 years into their relationship would just say things like, you know, she really hit the jackpot with him and she was so lucky. And
I have thoughts on this.
What?
Sometimes I think when people are, okay. This is going to sound terrible, but sometimes when I think people are so overly like, this is so wonderful and it's so great, sometimes I think people are either trying to convince themselves or trying to convince other people.
So basically Melissa's saying there's no possible way.
No one's this happy. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm very happy, but I'm not the person that you'll ever see on Facebook writing like, oh, my husband did these things for me. Like, I know what he did. He knows what he did. I'm thankful.
He knows what he did.
Yeah, normally it's that tone that I'm taking, but no, when my husband does something nice, which he often does, I just did it right there. But no, but I don't know. The public declaration sometimes, it feels like you're protesting a little too much.
Well,
there.
Yeah, and especially 10 years into your relationship, like, we get it. You obviously like each other because you're still together. So we don't care.
Stop shoving your happiness down my throat.
No, my husband's great too. I just thought I should throw that
and
out there.
And both our husbands listen to this. So continue.
So after the children were born, Tom began to, he left his career, of course, as a hockey player.
Yeah. Which wanted to keep that gorgeous face.
Right. So he stopped doing that. And of course, shifted more towards a family type of line of work so that he could just become more of a family man.
Sure.
So as part of that, he began to establish a franchise for a company called Paul Davis Emergency Services. And what they did was they specialized in property restoration, but I read that they also took care of things like mold remediation and stuff like that. So
fun work.
Yeah. No, yeah. Real fun. So they bought a home in the woods, like I said, in Caton, New York in 2012. And that home also served kind of as a home base for Tom's new company. Right. And he would frequently have labor workers and everything coming in and out of there. Yeah. So I'm not sure at this point if Tom was actually doing the labor or if he was just managing the company and
the boss man.
Right. Yeah. Telling other people what to do.
Sure.
Which, I mean, I would be fine
it.
With that. Like, that would be right up my alley.
Yeah.
I don't want to do the work.
Yeah, no.
I can tell you the work that needs to be done.
I can tell you, yeah. But then ultimately, I'm just going to do it myself because I know how to do it better.
Exactly. So among the laborers that would go to the home frequently was a man named Michael Beard. And it was one of... also one of Tom's childhood friends, Brian Lang. And they all kind of hung together and worked together. And like I said, they would meet at the house. I don't know why you would need to meet at the residence.
Yeah, what is
I guess they didn't have an office.
Yeah, but like, what are you getting from there?
I mean, maybe they stored all their tools and stuff and they had, I mean, I really don't know. Like I said, I have no idea what they did.
There's some good detail brought to you by Moms and Murder. We have no idea what they did.
I know. So I guess the childhood friend, Brian Lang, planned to open a home remediation franchise as well. And Tom saw an opportunity for them to kind of join forces and combine with their powers combined.
Yeah,
they will make an amazing company. So Lang opened a Surf Pro franchise, which I've seen.
Heard of Surf Pro.
I have too. I believe we have them down here and I've seen the trucks. That company really rings a bell to me. They have like a green truck with the orange Surf Pro.
Nope, can't tell you all that. No? I just noticed that the name because it doesn't have an E in it. And Surf.
And that drives you crazy.
It annoys me. Yeah.
So Tom came on as a project manager when they started the Surf Pro thing. And he brought, of course, much of his equipment and that he had purchased for the Paul Davis company.
Right.
And he also brought some of the laborers, including Michael Beard. And I'm guessing there was a couple of others. Oh, Luke Tetrault was another one that came on. So they obviously were good enough laborers that Tom thought he would keep them around when he moved companies. So Tom's business ventures were prospering and he was, of course, making a lot of money. Like I said, they maintained this beautiful home that they had and everything seemed to really be going well for them. But apparently Tom had a few secrets that he was harboring.
Secrets.
I know. There's always something.
Yeah.
But those who knew him stated that apparently he was really obsessed with money. He liked making it. He liked spending it.
Yeah.
He liked gambling with it. I mean, hey, this sounds completely normal. We're all obsessed with money.
But not to this degree. This is like, what was his name? Anthony Curcio. Like where like that's all that matters. Money's your ultimate goal.
Right.
Which I would be screwed if that was it.
I mean, I know. Thankfully, I'm not that way because, like you said.
I would be so disappointed.
I would have to turn to some, like, really questionable means of getting money.
Yeah, exactly.
Case. I've just learned to live.
I'm good.
I've learned to live in poverty.
Yeah.
We're good. So he apparently also had, like, an insatiable obsession with women. So he, you know, he was not this stand-up guy that you would think, like, with this beautiful family. And by the way, if you guys go and take a look at this family, they're really good looking people. Okay.
Ugh.
Kelly was beautiful. And so I always, when I hear of men who like have this gorgeous wife who like is this great mom and like, you know, like what is wrong with you for wanting to go out there and look for something else? Like what that, you know
it's
what I mean?
Attention and all of those, like, I don't know. Like he was like king in the hockey world or whatever.
Right. I'm sure he was used to that type
of
lifestyle.
So he's probably used to all the attention and he's looking for it.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing DashPass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With DashPass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, DashPass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With DashPass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly DashPass pays for itself. On average, it takes just 2 orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, DashPass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for DashPass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. DashPass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for DashPass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
So one thing I remember hearing about was, tell me if you remember this, one of his niece, was it Kelly's niece?
It was Kelly's niece.
She tried to say, I don't buy this at all. She could be right, but this is way out there to me, that he told her that he was having affairs with multiple women. Why would you just like, hey, want some coffee? Also, I'm banging a bunch of
people. And she's like a teenager. So why is this is not an appropriate conversation to be having with a teenage girl in the first place. But he did. I saw that in the Dateline that we watched.
Yeah.
That she had said that he would confide in her and tell her things, which like you said, is just very weird because she's a young girl and really he has no business sharing any of this information with her.
But the other side of that is that he could be like, well, she's not going to say anything. Like, this is really weird. Information.
That's true. Although it did, I had read basically that he was so obsessed with women, like he didn't care if they were married, single, underage. Like apparently, so ew, it makes you wonder if he was trying to be like a slime ball and like get close to Kelly's niece. I don't know. That makes me so skeevy to even talk about that. But anyway.
Sorry, got off track. That just threw me off.
Yes, but several women did allege affairs with Tom, and they said that he would constantly discuss his marriage in a negative light and have very harsh things to say about Kelly, like that she was lazy, ungrateful. He would call her the B word and beep. Just sounds like a really wonderful husband, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know wives can be hard to live with, especially the ones like us who are staying home all the time and just driving our husbands crazy.
Oh, my gosh. How many text times can we text? What time will you be home? Please just tell me. I can't take it anymore.
I know. I start losing it. My husband gets off work at 5, and the traffic that he has to fight to get home, it makes it – sometimes he doesn't get home until 6. And honestly, at like 6:01, I'm calling. I'm like – where are you? Like, you're running late. Like, it should
I hope you're dead because there's no reason this should be taking so long.
Because if you take much longer, you will be when you get here. So I guess Tom had put on a show and kind of hid these feelings from his wife. And they even found, like, as frequently as just days before her murder, he was exchanging, like, loving, normal husband text messages with her. But at the same time, was also exchanging, you know, sexually charged messages to someone else.
Yeah.
So he just was a real, real stand-up guy.
Yeah, real. That's our go-to stand-up guy. So on the night of the murder, it was a typical night at the Clayton's house. Around 7:30 that night, Tom left to go play poker at the home of their longtime friends, Greg and Linda Miller. And they were a little bit older than Clayton's, right?
They were.
Nothing wrong with that. You can have older friends, whatever. But I just thought, like,
It is kind of noteworthy. They are not the same. Like, they're not like another young couple. They are a more mature, not old, but yeah. just more.
The older I get, the harder it is for me
to say
even,
anybody is yeah. old. I know. I'm like, well, they're not that old.
And also, I can't tell how old anybody is. It's a whole thing with me now. So this is something Tom did a lot. So he wasn't, this wasn't like a weird alibi situation. It was like typical for him to go out and play poker, you know, one night a week. So Kelly would stay at home with their kids that night. Very normal. What the mom does, you know, she stays home and he goes and plays poker. And so the Millers said that not only was Tom there that whole evening, whenever they talked to police, he was acting totally fine. Everything was normal. Nothing. I've said normal now 3,000 times, but nothing.
Everything was normal.
Yeah. Super. They did not notice anything out of the ordinary. So around 11 that night, Tom actually asked Linda if he could use her cell phone. He said he had to make a real quick call and his cell phone was out in his vehicle, which, why can't you walk 5 feet and get your cell phone?
Right.
But whatever, that's part of the whole thing, I guess. So he makes a call, and then he continues to play the game, plays poker, and then he leaves around 12:20 a.m.
Which is fine and normal, I guess. but one note about the fact that he said he didn't have his phone, I guess, was it on the Dateline or maybe it was or somewhere else that I read, but I guess the people that were there also playing poker recalled that he did have his phone with him.
Oh, yeah.
They said that they remembered looking down and he had his phone in his hands, like, while he was at the table and everything. So that, you know, you'll come to find out why. I guess it doesn't really matter whether he did or didn't, because clearly he used Linda's phone for yeah. whatever it was that he needed yeah. to do.
Intrigue.
Right. So after he left at 12:20, it only took him about 10 minutes to get home. He returned home around 12:30 a.m. And that's when he discovered Kelly's body and made the frantic 911 call,
right.
which you can hear. If you look up, you can find the 911 tape. And it sounds very convincing, you know, yeah. very typical of what you would expect a husband finding his wife.
Yeah.
Dead at their home, you know, would sound like. So he made the 911 call about 12:34 in the morning. And like I said before, by all appearances, it looked like somebody had broken into the home and there was some kind of attack. And unfortunately, right. Kelly, you know, was attacked to the point where she lost her life that night.
Right.
But there was questions, you know, who would do that? Why? What was the motive? Yeah. There was nothing stolen inside the home. So this wasn't like a robbery, you know, situation. So really they had nothing really to go on. And then of course the husband wasn't home. So when the police arrived, it was kind of like, okay, they really had nothing to start
yeah.
looking into this with.
Well, and they lived out in the woods, so it's not like, you know what I mean? Like, you're going there with a purpose.
Right, you know where you're going.
Yeah, yeah,
you didn't
yeah.
just come upon this house in a neighborhood and thought, I'll just pick this one.
I've been wanting to murder all day. I'll do this one.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
So as detectives began to investigate, the case kind of becomes like a classic whodunit. They didn't have a lot of information to go on. Tom had a solid alibi, and they started considering other possible suspects in the murder.
Right.
After speaking with several family members and friends, the name Michael Beard had come up. Good old Michael Beard,
yeah.
who, of course, you'll remember was the laborer who worked with Tom.
Right.
And, you know, they were just good friends. So after, like I said, speaking with several family members, I believe it was the niece that we'd spoke about yeah. before who mentioned him mm-hmm. and said, well, you know, actually, Michael Beard was just fired from ServPro not too long ago. So that could be a possible
motive,
you know, why he would want to do this. So the detectives contacted him immediately, and no problem. He agreed to meet with them, would answer their questions. He was extremely cooperative.
Yeah.
And initially the police said, there's really nothing to see here with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really make sense. And like Kelly's sister and mom had said, you know, it would be a possibility, but why would he do that? And like, even if he was upset with Tom for losing his job, what would be the purpose to go like kill your wife? Like, why
right.
wouldn't you do something to Tom?
Yeah.
You know, himself, if you really wanted to get that kind of revenge.
Right. This is going to sound strange, but I thought Michael Beard was kind of likable. Is that terrible? I thought he was kind of likable.
Yeah, he seemed like a decent guy, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and family members and friends did say that Kelly, you know, she would be very nice to him, but she I guess she did kind of feel uncomfortable with him.
Yeah.
And especially wouldn't want to be home alone with him around. But honestly, that's not really that weird. I don't want to be home alone with my kids with a man, like, that my husband works with, you know, unless he's there. Like, it's normal to say, like, that you wouldn't want a strange man at your home, you know, while you're there by yourself. So that didn't, you know, that wasn't really surprising to me. But, you know, Kelly's sister said that Kelly would make him lunch and, you know, give him tea, iced tea or whatever, lemonade, or, you know, just showed him hospitality just like anyone else.
Yeah.
And so there was really never anything, you know, that would indicate that she was fearful of this man for any reason. So, I mean, I guess that's that. That is what it is. So, but yeah, I thought he did seem nice enough.
Yeah, I know. You know? Nice enough for sure.
So while they were doing the detective work and trying to piece together the puzzle, Linda Miller remembered the phone call that Tom had made from her cell phone that night of the poker game. And she immediately went through her phone to try and see who Tom had called that night. Well, surprise, surprise, there was no evidence on her. You know, whenever you look at pull up your call log, it'll show you everything. Well, on the call log, there was nothing there to show that he had made a call at that around that time, around 11 p.m. And so,
She remembered him hearing him.
Exactly. Talking. So it wasn't just like, oh, maybe he never made a phone call, because she recalled that she couldn't hear exactly what he was saying, but it was definitely, he was having a conversation.
Yeah.
So she was very certain that he did call someone. Right. And obviously the only logical explanation is that he deleted the call.
Right.
So of course, anyone, I think at this point, would be like, that's a little strange. You know, I would like to look more into this and find out, you know, who did he call and
Ghostbusters.
Right. Like, you know, give this information to the police. So they, she had her husband even try, this just reminds me how we said they were like an older couple. And this was, it just kind of makes me laugh because she, you know, didn't believe that she was looking, you know, couldn't find the call. And she like asked her husband, like, can you look, you know, and see, maybe I'm missing something. But it just reminds me of my, of like helping older people in my life with technology.
Oh my gosh.
Stuff.
My dad is, I don't know. His email address, I can't even say it, but it sounds very inappropriate, and he doesn't mean it that way at all.
Well, now I want to know what it is.
This is terrible. Jamie Ray all day. What is he doing all day? We don't know. But I don't think that email address even works, so feel free to email him at whatever you want. I guarantee he doesn't even know how to log into it, but that's like my life with somebody with zero technology skills.
Right. It's funny. I know. I love older people in technology stuff. Yeah. It really is fun.
We can say older people because we are feeling feisty.
We say older. We don't say old.
We're on our way.
We're all old.
We're on our way.
So anyway, so they didn't find, together they looked through and they couldn't find any evidence of the phone call. So they decided that their next step would be to just contact the cell phone company directly and have the records pulled.
Right.
So that's what they did. And then sure enough, the evidence they were waiting to find was on those phone records, and they found at approximately 11 p.m. a phone call was placed to a number that they didn't recognize.
Yeah.
So at this point, they just went to the police with the information. They said, okay.
I love people like this.
I do too. You know, and these are friends, longtime friends. And they, you know, and so it just, like you said, it's great. I love it when people, you know,
narc. You know, I love a good narc.
I mean, you always hope that you're going to have like those friends who will just like keep quiet for you.
I don't. If I do something wrong, call me out on it. I don't deserve to go free.
See, I'm the one. I would never turn you in.
I'll send you right to jail.
I'll just keep my mouth shut. Unless they come asking. I'm not going to lie for you.
But I'll put money in your commissary, but I'm not helping you out of jail.
So the detectives ended up looking into this. Of course, they took it seriously and they agreed that it was suspicious that, you know, the call was made and deleted and all that. And then, so they took the phone number and they did their little beep, 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 beep police work.
Nope. Don't do that again.
And the number came back to none other than Michael Beard.
Ooh.
So, basically Tom was calling Michael Beard the night his wife was murdered.
Right.
And why would he be doing that? Right. It's kind of late for a work phone call at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
And you're in the middle of a poker game. So you would think if it was something work-related, you would just wait till the morning.
Yeah.
But as we'll come to find out, it had nothing to do with work.
Nothing to do with work.
So the detectives actually started taking a closer look now at Tom as well. Because clearly something's going on that's a little strange, you know. And especially now that this name Michael Beard had come up before as a possible suspect. And now they have a little bit to work with here, you know, to go on. So the detectives actually conducted several interviews with Michael Beard. And like I said, initially they really didn't think anything was there. So they kind of just kept letting him go and would just say, we'll be in touch with you. But eventually, after several of these interrogations, and then especially after this phone call information comes out and everything, Michael Beard just goes ahead and confesses, says that he did this.
Again, with the co-conspirators and with the accessories, like, why are you going to do this and then confess? I mean, I'm glad they confessed, but my goodness, what are you getting out of this?
Right. I mean, and then, like you said, like, if you're going to confess that easily, like, you're just a terrible criminal.
Yeah.
Like, you would think you would hang on for a little bit and just, like, try to get by. They really weren't suspecting him.
Yeah.
So you think he could have rode that wave for a little bit longer.
Maybe he had a guilty conscience, which, why can't people have guilty conscience whenever somebody says, hey, you want to murder my wife? You say yes. Right. And then you feel guilty.
And then you just don't
do
it.
Yeah.
So anywho, eventually he just confessed. He said, yep. I did it.
Got it.
I went to their house and murdered, you know, whatever. So, but as part of his confession, he also said that Tom had offered to pay him $10,000 to murder Kelly.
Right.
So now we're kind of starting to get into, like, the heart of the matter, you know, that yes, Tom had an alibi, but he did have something, at least a small part. Well, I guess
the big part.
Big part. It's like the part.
Yeah.
Murder for hire.
Yeah.
So I guess, and this is, like, I don't understand. He offered him $10,000. $10,000, it's a lot of money, but it's not enough to kill
What's your number,
someone.
Mandy?
I don't know. I need to have enough money to, like, go off grid. And, like, you know, like, $10,000 can't get me out of the U.S.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I don't think I would. I don't know what my number is.
Oh, gosh, Mandy.
I haven't reached
it. For the
it
record,
yet.
I have no number. Just rage fits that will eventually turn into murder. I'll get nothing out of it.
I guess Michael Beard was actually desperate for money because, of course, like we said, he had gotten fired and lost his job. Well, then apparently Tom Clayton was also his landlord. So I'm like, whoa. First of all, that's a problem. You should not have one person being your literal lifeline for everything. You know, that's who you depend on for work. It's who you know, you depend on to keep a roof over your head. Like, you have way too much invested into this one person.
Right.
All your eggs are in one basket.
Yeah.
So how many more?
Like, eggs do you have? Is that where you're going with this? Yeah, it's not going well.
So I guess Beard was just willing to do whatever Tom said. And when Tom said, I'll give you 10 grand, like, if you just kill my wife, I mean, I guess it just sounded like a great idea to a desperate person who was needing money.
No.
But, like, 10K is going to run out really fast. You know, I could spend $10,000 in a weekend. I feel like
if it ever happened, dreamland.
Just, like, easily, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to sustain you. It doesn't, I don't know. And the whole reason Tom didn't want to get divorced, right, was because he didn't want to give Kelly half of his money.
Right. And so, like, how much money do you even have? Honestly, I don't understand how you can just say, I have 10 grand sitting in the bank. I'll give you.
Yeah.
You know.
This is not an issue. I can buy you a Diet Coke. That's about all I can do. Right. And it better still be on the dollar menu.
So Tom apparently had originally planned for this murder to take place at a different time than what it actually did. Apparently he had scheduled, like, a business trip. So he was planning on originally being out of town completely when Michael went over and killed his wife. But I guess for whatever reason, that did not work out. So they had to take the next opportunity, which came shortly after, when the other man that I mentioned, Luke Tetrault, who was also the worker who worked with Tom and Michael Beard.
Right.
And he, on September 25th, he had actually asked Tom if he could borrow a four-wheeler from him for the weekend. So Tom saw an opportunity to make the murder happen and would be using this other person. So now you're getting another person involved.
Right.
This person really, I feel bad for him because he didn't really even know what the intent was. But on September 26th, he did show up to get the four-wheeler, and he drove a red pickup truck. I'm just going to say that because I'll use the term red pickup again to keep everything kind of, you
making
know,
sense.
Making sense.
There
right?
you go.
So the next day, though, he told him to just bring the four-wheeler to his job whenever he was going to return it instead of, like, taking the, you know, bringing the four wheeler to his house. Right. Like, don't go all the way to my house. Just bring it to work and then we'll figure it out. I'll get the four wheeler back from you or whatever.
Right.
So I guess the original intent was that he would take the four wheeler to the job to exchange it back. And then Tom would put the four wheeler in his truck and then just take it home.
Right.
So that was what the plan was. Well, then I guess Tom said, no, let's just trade trucks. I'll take your truck with my four-wheeler, and then I'll take it home and unload it, and then I'll just bring your truck back the next day.
Right.
Well, isn't this perfect for Tom? Because now he has a vehicle that's not his
right.
in the equation, you know? Yeah. So that is even better for him as part of his cover story. Well, you would think, I guess, it gets – I think it probably gets a little confusing trying to keep all your details straight when you're planning something
like
this.
It's another reason I could never plan a murder. I don't have that kind of memory.
I don't either. I would be the one who would get caught by something stupid. I have notes everywhere. I know. I would be the one who would get caught because I did some dumb thing that, like, you know, didn't even make sense. So he, of course, would take the truck and they would do all that I just said. So on the day of the murder, Tom did drive the red pickup truck to drop the four-wheeler off back at his house. And then he returned that truck to the ServPro location around 6 p.m. and left in a green ServPro truck according to surveillance. So now at this point, the red pickup truck is still at the ServPro location.
Right.
And it just is going to be left there and everything appears to be fine. Four-wheeler's dropped off. Everything's fine. However, keep in mind now Tom has the key and has access to this truck still.
Right.
So when Beard got the phone call from Tom at 11 p.m. that night, he immediately set their plan into motion. He rode his bike to the ServPro where he picked up Tetralt's red pickup truck and then he drove off to the Clayton residence. So he switches his mode of transportation. He drives the bike there, gets off, and this is all on surveillance camera. And I saw the footage, actually, what they said, oh, here he is driving up on the bike, and here he is taking the truck. And it's really grainy and dark, and you can't see. But I guess, you know, after all of the other stuff, they've determined that it was definitely Michael Beard.
Well, and he invest.
Right. And he said that's what happened. So clue number one.
Look at me on this bicycle.
Right. So Michael Beard pulled up to the Clayton residence around midnight and entered the home using a key. He got in through the garage and using a key that, of course, Tom had generously left for him. So he would be able to get in quietly and not have to break anything or, you know. And on his way in, he grabbed an old maul handle that had not been discarded after the head had fallen off. So what is a maul? Do we know what a maul is?
I don't know. It sounds like if it hits something, it's pretty serious.
But yeah, the head of it fell off. I don't know. We're going to have to Google a picture of a maul here really quickly.
Yeah.
Because I'm not even sure what that is.
I'm on it.
Yeah. So this is, of course, the tool that he ended up using to beat Kelly. Like I said, starting when she was asleep in her bed and chased her around down the stairs and into the kitchen. And so meanwhile, after he did that, he left, quickly changed clothes, drove the red truck back to the ServPro, got on his bike, and took off. And just that was that. And so they think, of course, they're in the clear. Nobody is now connected to this murder. Nobody is going to know who, you know, who did it.
Right.
So after that, Tom went home, of course, and made the air quote here, discovery.
Yeah.
That he supposedly was surprised to find, but as it turns out, he wasn't. So Beard and Clayton were both charged with first-degree murder for the murder-for-hire scheme, and they also were both charged with second-degree murder. So I'm not really sure how that works because first-degree murder is premeditated, and then second-degree, I don't know how you can
I feel like it's either one or the other.
Right. Yeah. Well, they were charged with
maybe in New York State it's not.
But actually, Michael Beard recanted his original confession, which was, of course, he confessed to the events as they happened. But then he recanted his confession and actually told a different story.
Yeah.
Which, like you have, we've discussed together that he said he was supposed to go set the house on fire.
Yeah.
And, but when he got there, Kelly was already dead. So
somebody else had already killed her.
Like, what luck.
What a weird night. Yeah.
Yeah. What a weird night for sure. But the jury actually did not go for that. They,
thank you.
Yeah. They were like, no, we don't think so. And he was convicted of first and second degree murder. So like
again, I don't know how that works.
I don't know how that works either. So Tom Clayton had a trial at a different date and he also was convicted. I didn't see anything about how long they were in prison for.
Yeah. So one thing we were going to talk about that is the most disturbing thing in this case to me. So Tom basically, well, here's a few things. Tom, why on earth when people are going to kill somebody, why do they have to call the person that's going to kill them? Why did he have to make that phone call? You can't get home and see that she's dead. You have to say, hey, did you do it?
And, like, if you are putting this much effort and thought into, like, planning this perfect crime and making sure you have an alibi and making sure that
there's trucks involved and all kinds
and
of
all
stuff.
This, like, don't be dumb and, like, do something stupid, like, use someone's cell phone. Like, come on, get a burner phone. Murder 101. Don't use your own phone
and
or anyone you know.
And pay cash for the burner phone.
Exactly.
Don't buy it at Walmart.
Load it up with some prepaid minutes.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, and don't be caught on surveillance camera buying the phone either.
Yeah. We could help you get away with it, you guys.
But you would think, though, it's like some of these ways these, like, dumb criminals get caught. Like, they're such common ways. Like, really, you got caught because you used a cell phone to call the
But why person? Did he have to call? I don't understand that. Like, when they
just
know
to be
the
like,
wheels
oh,
are in
yeah.
motion. Oh, right. Dead? Great. Okay.
Right.
I'm going to finish.
Or it's time for you to go over there now. Like, come on. Surely you should have discussed all this.
Yeah. Can't you get this times right before? I'm glad they're stupid, though. I love
I know.
That
I do,
stupid.
Too. I love stupid people because they're stupid.
Yeah. But then the other, like, super, super upsetting thing to me in this is that in both scenarios where Tom was going to have Kelly killed, whenever he was out of town and whenever she was at the poker night, he knew his kids were going to be home.
What a jerk.
I mean, there's no, like, he couldn't have set it up where the kids were at the grandparents, something. Why have them included in that? That's so disgusting to me that, like, I don't know, that it can't be out of love for your kids that you're doing it. Like, you hear that some people are in abusive relationships and they have to kill the spouse and they did it because they love their kids, whatever. I get that. But this... he knew they were upstairs, you know, and this was hours. They were there with a dead body for hours before he got home.
Were they?
Well, at least an hour.
At least an hour. Yeah, I would say at least an hour.
1 minute is too long.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And you're talking about young kids, like you said, who are home alone. And now they've also gone through this whole, like, crazy ordeal. The only thing I could think is that he was assuming the kids would be asleep. And maybe that Kelly's death would have been faster. So she wouldn't have been chased through the house and, like, all this other thing.
There's
just no excusing it. I mean, honestly, like you said, it's like, that's like a monster thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, these are your children. These are your babies. And
the only bright side is that Michael Beard did not kill the kids, because you do hear about those cases where a kid is going to be a witness.
Right.
And then they kill the kid too. So, okay. Thank you, Michael Beard.
But although if he was going to set the house on fire, the kids would have been killed. Like, that was obviously, if that was plan A, you know, it's awful. It's terrible.
It is. So, yeah, we're not – no. Tom, I hope you lose all your teeth in prison.
Exactly. Well, the Clayton children, speaking of them, they actually now live with Kelly's sister, Kim. And Kim has said that she believes that this all happened because Tom just simply wanted his freedom, which, like, I have zero sympathy for you. Like, I'm sorry. I can't even with that. But the detectives actually had found out that Tom had upped Kelly's life insurance to $1 million a year before her murder. I'm sorry. That should always be a red flag, I feel like. Yeah. If you, like, ever up your wife's life insurance policy.
And it's not her idea.
Exactly. Then I think you should.
Run, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Run away. I wonder if she even knew, you know, that he did that. Can you do that?
I've heard of that happening before and things, but I don't know if that's necessarily legal. But how many times – this is going to get me in trouble – have you signed your husband's name for things like that, you know, like, oh, he needs to sign this, and you just sign it and you're not –
forgery.
Yeah. Admitting to all kinds of things. But, yeah, so anyway, yeah, I've done that. No, I haven't done that, but I've heard of people doing that. But yeah, so I mean, I don't think it's so far off. But luckily, like, my insurance policy and my husband's is so small, like – it would not be worth killing me.
No.
You've got
to
keep me around. You're not going to get any money, and then you're going to be stuck with two kids. You're not going to kill me.
But anyway, so because he did that, because he had, you know, they found that out about him doing that a year prior, of course, the family thinks that he had been considering this, like, murder for hire scheme for a long, long, long time. Like, which is just so creepy that she was going on living a life and with this man who is plotting to have her killed the whole time. Like, gosh, it just makes you terrified. Like, it just makes me want to go live alone and be away from people. I feel like if you don't even know your own husband is doing this behind your back, like, who do you know?
I wonder did know, though, because, you know, if he's cheating on her, there's all these things going on. I mean, she could have known some stuff going on. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of times women do have some kind of clue. So I just feel terrible for her because this is another one of those cases. There's never a reason for murder, justified homicide, sure, but there's no reason to kill somebody. Like, divorce them. it's
right.
Just do it.
Like, why can't
I'm not pro divorce, but
no.
Like, if the option is divorce and murder.
Well, I guess he did want to leave her, but he said he was worried that she was going to take everything, which
she deserved to.
Right. And okay. Like, so now you're just going to kill her. And then if you get caught, you're going to be in jail forever. Like, I wrote in my notes down on the bottom that when I sent this, my notes to Melissa to review them, I wanted to make sure she read all the way to the end.
So oh, yeah.
I actually put in there in the bottom that Kelly was a lot prettier than Bubba in the jail cell that's keeping him warm at night now.
Yeah. So. I read them.
Yeah.
So that is the story.
Kelly Clayton.
Kelly Clayton. It's a wonderful person. But so we have a couple things real quick. We finally changed the name of our Facebook group.
That was the Moms and Murder podcast discussion group, blah, 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 blah. So we have a better name now.
We had several people join, but apparently people couldn't find us. And that seems so strange to me. So we are changing it to...
Mum's the word, I just love so much. Honestly, whenever I saw it, I thought it was perfect.
It's so fun. I love it. We sound like so sophisticated. I can't even say the word. We sound
sophisticated.
Yeah, we sound like we actually know what we're doing and we're just lovely ladies out on the town.
Right.
Or British. I'm fine with either of those, but neither one of us are world travelers, so... So if you want to find us on Facebook, Mum's the Word, and you just have to answer a quick question that is, are you going to try to murder us? And if you answer it correctly, we'll let you join the group. So thank you to Mary Virginia in our Facebook group for that great name idea, Mum's the Word. Find us there. So we have a couple I'm Invincible wins. The first one is from Twitter. And it's, I'm invincible when I walk home alone at night, pretending to talk on the phone, casually mentioning my MMA training.
I love that one. Actually, the whole pretend phone call thing is one that I use all the time. Yeah, I mean.
We get that one a lot.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, I know. It actually works. Well, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel like it works really well. There's a really pretty cardinal sitting on the windowsill over here. I'm just...
Of course, Mandy sees an animal and freaks out. So she's going to try and figure out a way to bring it to the farm.
I am. Can I catch it?
No. Oh, my gosh. Stop. And so the next one comes to us from Christina on our Facebook page. And she said, I'm a mom of a 1 and 2-year-old and my husband deploys, so I often have to do things alone. My invincible win is... when I get both kids locked in their car seats and can shut and lock the door so predators can't try to steal them. Like, I have a mini panic attack every time I'm done grocery shopping until they're safely in my car. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Getting two kids in the car, and they act the most obnoxious when you're like, it's nighttime in a grocery store parking lot.
Right. Like, get in the car right now. I know. I do the same thing. Although, you know, one of my favorite tricks is just to throw them in the car and then get in and buckle them in from the inside. Because, you know, I'm always paranoid that someone's going to jump out and come grab us and take us away.
I do that in the van. I just, like, hop in and now.
Oh, well, it's easy when you have a van.
I'm a van person now, Mandy, and I will not look back on you peasants in your cars. Just kidding. So the last one we have came in a voicemail from Sabrina from Austin, Texas. And she said, I'm invincible when, let me make sure I have this correct, that whenever she puts the keys sets her keys in between all of her fingers like Wolverine. And so if an attacker comes up, you can slash them in the face.
Right.
Yeah. So I've done that since I was little.
Right. That was like one of the first self-defense things that my mom told me whenever I first started driving and was going to be like, you know, because I had a job. I got my first job when I was 15. Nothing fancy. I just scooped ice cream. But sometimes I'd have to stay there late at night.
Yeah, yeah.
So my parents always would worry, you know, about me being young and having to go out at night in the parking lot and drive home. So that was one of actually the first things that they ever taught me to do was do the key in between the fingers thing.
The only issue is they have to be 1 inch from your face to be able to slash them.
And so I do get a little concerned that that might not be adequate in actuality. But it does make you feel invincible.
Yeah. So. We look like a bunch of psychos that we're all walking around with keys between our fingers, talking on the phone about MMA fighting, and then smiling at every security camera we see.
All of our listeners, if they do anything,
we're gonna get everybody committed.
We're all gonna look crazy.
Okay, so thank you for listening this week. Thanks for making it through Hurricane Irma with us, or at least us. We made it through Hurricane Irma.
I hope that everybody else did.
Hope everyone else did. Yeah. I said on our last show, spoiler alert, we made it through Hurricane Irma. Glad that was true.
Right.
Yeah. There's another hurricane coming, apparently, Maria. And
oh my gosh, I just can't.
I'm going to set my whole house on fire and just start over somewhere else. So anyway, thank you guys for listening. Get ready for our two promos. Remember to send us your reviews, and we will enter you for a wonderful, beautiful sticker that Mandy's still been playing with the whole time we've been talking.
Yes, I'm obsessed. Them. And like we said, don't forget, we do have voting going on for our potential next episode for our Patreon supporters. So if that's something you're interested in, definitely reach out to us or check us out on our Facebook group. And we would love to have your input on a case that you like or would like us to cover.
Absolutely. So have a nice week. Unless Hurricane Maria comes and takes us,
I just can't even think of that. It's too early to even start worrying. I'm still not recovered from the mental exhaustion from the last one.
Anyone with AC cannot tell me that. So right. You guys have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Hey, y'all. Jen and Lindsay here from the Corpus Delicti podcast, here to tell you to check out our show.
If true crime's your thing, it's ours too. Just a little dash of lightheartedness and a hint of Southern charm.
Serial killers, controversial cases, historical hallmarks, we've got it all.
So just join us every Tuesday on iTunes, Podbeam, or many other podcast apps as we dive into compelling cases and crack them open for you.
You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's CORPUSDELICTI.
See you Tuesday.
Hi, I'm Lainey, host of the new podcast, We're All Just Pretending. It's a podcast that has elements of Dear Abby with a twist of Post Secret. Every episode, I'll read listener questions and provide advice and insight as a friend. My own pod friends will even join in and offer their advice on parenting, relationships, and even give you really bad advice on purpose. Since we all have secrets to share, there'll also be a segment focusing on letting the skeletons out of your closet. If you're looking for advice or want to share a secret, head to allpretendingpod.com. And remember, we're all just pretending here.
Hi, this is Stacey P. from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I love the Moms and Murder podcast. Mandy and Melissa are hilarious and totally moms that I could see myself hanging out with while drinking lots of wine and discussing if we think Melissa currently has too many animals or not. My current favorite case is the bank heist with Anthony Curcio. It's informative and it's hilarious, and I think anyone who likes a more lighthearted version of True Crime Podcast would love Moms and Murder.
Hi, my name is Joe. I'm from Ohio, and I'd have to say my favorite episode is Casey Anthony, because I'm not sure who I hate more, her or me and Grace. Well, have a good day, ladies. Thanks.
Hi, Mandy. Hi, Melissa. It's Roseanne, all the way over here in California. And of course, I wanted to call you guys to congratulate you on your 10th episode. I'm so thrilled you guys pulled through the hurricane and had an episode up and ready to go without a hitch. You guys are totally amazing, and I absolutely so thoroughly enjoy listening to every single episode of your show. Every Tuesday morning, it like makes my day heading to work. You guys are so cute, so funny, so adorable. It's the only time that I actually laugh and giggle at all things murdery. I love you guys, and I love the show. And here's to many, 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 many more episodes. Take care. Love you.
Hi, Mandy and Melissa. It's Vanessa here from rainy old England. I'm loving the podcast. I binged it all in a couple of days last week. Thank you, Stacey P, for recommending it. I loved all the episodes. I think probably Anthony Curcio was my favourite just because it was so different and funny and just different to all the sort of normal depressing stuff. But yeah, it's great. Keep up the good work and speak to you soon. Bye.
Happy 10 episodes, Moms and Murder. This is Melissa, and I have been friends with the other Melissa for a long time, and I'm just so happy to support her and Mandy, and love the podcast. Keep it going, ladies.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms and Murder podcast.
Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.